Hi, Spring fans. Welcome to a beautiful podcast. I'm your host, Spring Developer Advocate Josh Long, and this show is all about the real heroes behind Spring and its ecosystem.
Hi, Spring fans, and aloha from the American Emerald Isle, with apologies to Ireland, of course, the United States of Hawaii, where I'm on week 3 of my little vacation with my family. We visited Maui, then Kauai, and now as we round out our tour, we're on the island of Honolulu, where we've got a jam-packed day ahead of us. So let's get right into this amazing episode. In this episode, I have the pleasure of talking to my friend and one of our friends on the Microsoft team in the Azure Spring Cloud Partnership, Asir Salvasingh. Asir and I have been working together to advance Java and Azure, Spring and Azure, and Azure Spring Cloud in some permutation or another, in some way or another for, like half a decade? I mean, the guy is amazing. The relationship's only gotten more interesting in the last few years since we debuted Azure Spring Cloud. It's been my privilege to talk to Asir several times a month since. It occurred to me over one random late night conversation, talking shop, and dreaming the big impossible dreams that I bet you, dear audience, would like to listen and talk to Asir as much as I do. So I'm very happy that he agreed to join me on the show. The guy has been a huge part of the Microsoft's transformation into world-class advocate for Java developers. He understands the Spring community and works tirelessly to steer Microsoft in the right direction in terms of the Spring community. Now, you may have even seen him and me do some workshops together or participate in various panels together, so you probably know him. And if you don't, then good. This is the episode for you, friends. You're in luck. You did it. Good job. Congrats. Now, without further ado, enjoy the show, and as always, look forward to talking to you next time.
Starting us late, we made it. How are you?
I'm good. Good, Josh.
Can you introduce yourself to the audience? Because if I did it, I think I would miss something obvious and awesome and important.
Cool. So I'm Asir Salvasingh at Microsoft. I'm on point for everything customers, developers need to build, migrate, and scale Java applications on Azure. I'm also a Java dev. I started Java in 1995. It's about 26 years and having fun ever since.
26 years, so much fun. So you're working at Microsoft, which is a huge name right now in the Java space. And, you know, they're doing all this really cool stuff around OpenJDK. And they have this really, really strong cloud platform, Microsoft Azure, on which you work. You know, but when you started, when did you start at Microsoft?
I started in Microsoft about 16 years ago.
Oh, so it's different then, a little bit different, right?
Very different.
Like, has it been weird to see that wonderful trend?
I think it's awesome to see the trend where we are.
Yeah. It's just such a great company for all the things Java right now. I just love everything that they're doing.
It's a great time to be at Microsoft for Java developers.
Yeah. I'm a fan, as you know. Okay, so right now, we work on Azure Spring Cloud, right? Azure Spring Cloud is this managed, operationalized, production sort of oriented platform as a service thing that sits on top of Kubernetes, which sits on top of Azure, right? So can you tell us about that? I mean, what is the goal there?
So Spring developers, you know, when they deploy to the cloud, there are some impediments, like how can you figure out a dynamically scaling infrastructure, right? As the load comes in, how can you expand, right? There are other impediments like figuring out the app lifecycle in the cloud, monitoring in the cloud, wiring up enterprise things like automation, securing communications. There are many, many, many things where there are some impediments. So to make it easy, Microsoft and VMware got together. How can we reduce this friction and make it easy for our Spring Boot developers to deploy and scale and accelerate in the cloud? And that's how Azure Spring Cloud was born. And that's what Microsoft and VMware have been working on for several years. So
yeah,
fair to say that it is conceptualized, developed, built, and operated by Microsoft and VMware, that our developers are really loving them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Jointly. And we have there are people that were previously just, so by the way, this started at Pivotal, right? That was years ago. Is that, that to give people an idea of how long we've been working on this, it started at Pivotal in cooperation with the Spring team, and now the Spring team and rest of Pivotal are part of VMware. But yeah, the relationship is still strong, wonderful, you know? And yeah, it's, we have some customers that were Microsoft customers that are now sort of shared customers. We have customers that are Pivotal and VMware customers that are now shared because they, both sides, they can see the value of this, right? This wonderful platform. It's very hard to say that, I mean, there's, what is it? I don't know. Is Microsoft Azure number two right now? I think it might be close to number one in terms of the largest cloud platform out there, you know?
It's definitely a largest cloud provider on.
Yeah. So it's doing really, really well in the market. So it's very hard to say, well, you know, there's no value in that. When Microsoft knows how to run data centers and clouds and infrastructure at scale better than almost anybody out there, right? So already it's just like, well, of course, that sounds very interesting. I want somebody like Microsoft to get help me get to production, right?
Volume point of view, definitely Azure is available in 65 regions, serving 155 countries. That should be larger than all the other clouds combined.
Oh, yeah. In terms of like availability, distribution. Yeah, it's crazy. It's wonderful. What is the, like, where are the, what are there some places where it's not available? Like, I you know, people may not know, but Azure is actually available in China, kind of.
It is available in China. It's available in Europe. It's available in Australia.
Yeah.
South Africa.
Yeah.
Many, many parts. And we are continuously expanding. We recently announced a data center in Malaysia.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This was like 3 weeks ago. It should be in the news.
Oh, my partner, Tammy, she's Malaysian Chinese. I'll tell her. She'll be ecstatic. She always wonders how come I always got invited to these conferences in Singapore, which is right next door to Malaysia, but never to Malaysia. You know, it's like, I, you know, if somebody has a Java conference in Malaysia, I will go. You know, we would love to have a reason to go, but obviously the pandemic changes things for us right now. So, but anyway, yeah, that's great. It's everywhere. That means if you want to get an app that is easy to run into production and you want to have it in every geolocation, that'd be great. So Azure Spring Cloud, it takes some of the patterns from Spring Cloud, right? That's the, I think the original thing was, hey, microservices are common. They're a common use case. What services do they need? What infrastructure do they depend on? And what can a platform like Microsoft Azure do to operationalize those services, that infrastructure that supports microservices, right? And so in Azure Spring Cloud, we have what? We have the service registry, right?
We have the managed Spring Cloud service registry. We have managed Spring Cloud config server. I would say that's the beginning, right? We are continuously, both Microsoft and VMware are working together to innovate and bring more and more managed components so that from a developer point of view, all they have to think about is build their jars and deploy.
Yeah,
exactly. And at a click of a button, scale it out. Scale it out from 0 to a million requests per second to billion requests per second.
I've seen you do that, by the way.
Yeah.
I've seen you do that. You've done a demo where you actually scale out how many millions of requests per second or something?
I've shown 0 to 30 million requests per day. And then I showed the slider. If I keep spinning the slider, it can go very quickly to billion requests per day. And it's up to you as you put the as you are willing to pay, you can just keep scaling up, right? But you have to be careful.
Yeah.
Not to overdrive your expenses.
Right. It's a good demo, but you have to remember to. Yeah. And that's the other thing that's nice about Microsoft Azure is you have this thing called a resource group. So it's very easy to just put everything in a resource group and then delete that, and it's all taken care of, you know.
Also, we have this auto scale, right? In the auto scale, you can define your lower limit and upper limit based on either schedule or metrics.
Right.
So at no point in time, your budget is exceeded, right?
Right.
You define it, Right? That way you can have some amount of cost management and controls.
Oh, very good. Yeah, that's true. I focus always on when I, you know me, I love the code, right? So I never even look at the important stuff that every business will care about, like cost management, but you should. It's out, and I know that Microsoft Azure has very good reporting on infrastructure use and you know, cost management features. What is the sort of like, what is the, right now we have Azure Spring Cloud, but there's other ways to get Java apps running on Microsoft Azure, right? There's a lot of different ways. So can you talk about some of those different options?
Sure. I think when you look at Azure, Azure has the most managed options for Java developers. So when they think about Spring Boot, they can deploy to Azure Spring Cloud.
Yeah.
If they have Tomcat apps, they can deploy to Tomcat and App Service. If they have Java EE apps, they can deploy to JBoss EAP and App Service. Now, those are all managed options. Now, Azure also has other options, like you can containerize anything and run it in Azure Kubernetes Service. It's a very generalized platform, right?
Yeah.
And we have Azure Virtual Machines. So we also see customers lift and shift and quickly run it on Linux virtual machines as well. And they also run some subsystems, like, for example, if they're running a Hazelcast.
Yeah.
They can run it. Now, beyond these, right, if you take any app in Azure, any Java app, when you deploy it, it requires data, it requires cache, it requires messaging, it requires directory, right? So for all of these, right, if you take data, we have a portfolio of data services, whether it's SQL or NoSQL, and any of those companies, or any of those brands of your choice, whether you're using MySQL or SQL Database or Postgres or MongoDB, you have them. And when it comes to cache, we have Azure Redis Cache in collaboration with Redis Labs, right? So when customers are trying to use it for app cache or externalizing session management or running high-speed searches, we have that option for them. And when it comes to messaging and eventing, if they want JMS messaging system, cloud scale, or if they want a Kafka kind of event, then we have Event Hub, right? Event Hubs is available. And we also have Confluent. Confluent is available as a service in collaboration with Confluent. So you can have your both the on-prem as well as in the cloud running the same systems as well. When it comes to directory, enterprise-grade authentication and authorization, you can use Azure Active Directory, Azure Active Directory B2C. I know you have shown several demos using that, Josh, yourself. And the other important thing is we have this concept of machine identity for every unit that runs a piece of code.
Right.
That you can authorize access to backend services like data without using credentials. Right. It's more secure. That way, it's role-based access, and you don't have to worry about holding secrets or managing secrets in that
right.
kind of configuration.
So, do all the Azure Spring Cloud APIs already know and respect role-based authentication? So, if I try to make a request using the Azure Spring Cloud, using the Spring Cloud for Microsoft Azure client for Azure Cosmos DB, it'll automatically just work. I don't have to specify any username and password.
That works when you're talking to the data.
Yeah.
We also have customers who manage their secrets in Key Vault, right?
That way
your apps are not holding the secrets. Apps are granted access through role-based access to the Key Vault.
Yeah.
So apps can read from the Key Vault, and then it can use it for connecting as well. So both options are available.
So, and that would be good for things that I'm connecting to, perhaps that are not managed by Azure role-based authentication?
Yeah, you can
external
do
external services, maybe.
External services. Let's say you are using a third-party services, right?
Okay.
Maybe you're using an FTP service or an email service. You still need credentials to connect with them. So those can be completely managed by Azure Key Vault, and you can load it using role-based access.
And I know there's you can do like fully managed security, fully managed keys versus like you provide your own token or certificate, I remember there being a lot of really good options there for the Azure Key Vault. So it's really very secure.
Key Vault has, it can manage your keys, your secrets, and certificates.
Yeah.
All your certificates can be loaded from Key Vault itself. That way, when it loads, nothing is written to the disk.
Right.
And all remains in memory, and only the app can load. And who is loading is completely journal. So you can go back and audit who loaded those certificates, right? This way, you are building a zero trust system which authenticates and authorizes every access and minimizes your data exfiltration risk.
Yeah, it's wonderful. That kind of stuff is, these are the kinds of nuances that a company that cares about enterprise customers would care about, right? Because the enterprise cares about this stuff. It's
very much, very much. I think these are all their fundamentals for them.
Yeah. And, you know, it's, I love Spring, obviously. I'm always in my Spring t-shirt, but I'll be the first to admit that the hardest part is not running a REST API or whatever, writing code to talk to the database. It's making it so that this is stuff that you can put in production and have auditing and support security and authentication and have traceability and support uptime and, you know, all these other things that we tend to think of as non-functional requirements that are so hard to get right.
They are so hard, and that's what our enterprise customers go after, like high availability, placing apps across multiple regions.
Right.
Disaster recovery, when something goes wrong, the next one comes up alive, right?
Yeah.
Able to manage their secrets in a zero trust manner. You authenticate and authorize end users who are logging in, right? Store the certificates, automate everything. Right. Everything from provisioning, I mean, you can start all the way from idea to production, right? You automate everything using different types of pipelines. And monitoring, they want to monitor end-to-end. That's one important thing that they want to do so that they can keep an eye on production plan capacities and troubleshoot. And when it comes to developers, they want to see the log stream coming on directly on the machine so that from an enterprise customer's point of view, they want to make their developers as productive as possible, right? And application performance monitoring is another way they want to monitor all the apps and their dependencies around it so the developers can quickly get to problem to a root cause analysis and then try to fix them and see how it got fixed.
Yeah. That's so important right now. I know that that ability to just, it's day two. We talk about day two all the time, right? Day one is get your software into production. Day two is do it again, right? And do it to the point where you can sleep at night and not worry. I think day two is where computer science and enterprise applied, software, that's where we're spending all the money. Right, that's where so much work has to be done because it's just not yet all that clear anymore. And if you look back 40 years ago, there's an argument to be made about what is the single biggest thing you can do to improve the lot of the people working on software. And it's like, well, this new language supports object orientation. You know, that's nice. And then you have functional, and that was the big battleground. But now, it's all basically the same. We're fine. The languages are as abstract and as powerful as I think they're going to get for a while. There's not going to be huge leaps, but what makes all the difference in the world and where we see billions of dollars being invested by large companies like Microsoft is day two.
Yeah. Day two. The key words that we keep hearing is monitoring, end-to-end automation, zero trust.
Right.
Able to place everything inside their private network and manage the egress and ingress, all communications that are coming in. So these are all many of the keywords that we hear, which is very different from what was up in play 40 years ago.
Yeah. Totally. It's a wonderful time. I just, so I think right now where we can get so much value is if we can make it so that developers are part of the discussion when it comes to production, right? And I this is the whole DevOps movement, right? This whole idea that this should not be two distinct roles, right? The people responsible for production, you know, maybe there are specific people that carry the keys to production, or ideally no people, right? But there should be everybody that is aware of production, that cares about production, right? And so I don't think it's fair to make everybody learn how to stand up a complete and Kubernetes cluster and secure it and all that. So managed solutions like Azure Spring Cloud, to me, they feel like the future, right? They're the right compromise.
Okay, many of our developers and customers tell us that they like Kubernetes, but they don't want to learn or manage Kubernetes, right? In that kind of situation, Azure Spring Cloud is simply where they can deploy jars and scale, and all other things are taken care of by Microsoft and VMware for them.
Yeah, which is what you want. That's the hardest part is getting that. And so Azure is actually, you know, it's not. You can pay more for cloud infrastructure if you go to the other companies, right? It's very competitively priced. I think it depends on the certain features, but obviously some things are more or less expensive than others and all that. And so I just think it's a very well-rounded platform.
It's well-rounded. It has a good amount of features for you. It is pretty broad as well to make sure that when you're building for enterprise scale, you have all the other pieces necessary to build and run.
Yeah. And I think one part of that commitment that I've seen in the Microsoft team was the Microsoft team has come to the Java community in earnest. So even before there was a joint partnership between Microsoft and the Spring team and VMware and Pivotal, even before that, there was that financial arrangement, that financial partnership, Microsoft was, they had people working on Spring Cloud for Azure, right?
Right. I think I would say we have done, from Microsoft point of view, a decade of investments and collaborations.
Oh, yeah.
It's almost about 10 years. Even if you take VMware, when it was Pivotal, we started working together with the Spring team in January 2016. So it's almost 5.5, about to be 6 years now, right?
Yeah.
We have been working together. So we work with many, many companies to make sure that when our developers and customers bring their applications to Azure, there are many, many partners to support them. Because there are many, many software that are manufactured in the ecosystem by partners, right? Whether it's Oracle or IBM or Red Hat, VMware, Redis Labs, there are many, many partners like that. So it's been a long journey. About a decade, I would say.
Right. Long journey, but it started with Microsoft making a lot of investments that had no immediate profit, right? So for example, Spring Cloud for Microsoft Azure is all open source. It just works really nicely for the Spring community, and the Spring support that Microsoft has built for Microsoft Azure, mm-hmm. which was already the number two most profitable, biggest cloud platform when they started building it. So it's not like they were, you know, it wasn't like this was a desperate thing that they needed to do to get an audience. They were already huge. And they did this, there's a huge team of people that work on the Spring data integration, Spring Boot integration, Spring Security integration, all that across the different portfolio projects for Spring. And it's just been wonderful, wonderful to see.
It's a pretty large team, and we have been working with many of your team members.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Whether it's security or data or cash, I mean, you name it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Wonderful time. So I think that, I don't know if people know that. I really hope they do. It's just been so impressive to see the commitment to making Azure a wonderful place for the Java developers. And of course, a huge part of that is the Spring ecosystem. Now, I think things are changing a little bit. Things are getting, now there's this Azure Spring Cloud, but there's also new possibilities. So for example, it's possible now to build a container and then people want to deploy that. Is that a thing that we can do in Azure Spring Cloud?
Yeah, I think in Azure Spring Cloud, we're going to support containers, bring your own containers, right?
Oh.
Starting sometime in this summer, we'll be showing off how if you have your containers already, just treat them as applications and simply deploy to Azure Spring Cloud. And Azure Spring Cloud will do its application developer experience magic lifecycle for you. So you can create, deploy, start, stop, all those niceties that come with it. You can scale out, can scale in, you can define auto scale. You'll get the SLA as well. So you can deploy a containerized app. Expect it to be up and backed by Azure Spring Cloud, right? So that is coming very soon. Many of our developers are very excited. Customers are excited and they're looking forward to use it. Yeah.
And for me, I love the thing I love about Azure Spring Cloud is I don't need to worry about Docker images. Like for me, I won't be using that very much, but I prefer just to be able to give it my jar and just let it work, please. But it's just very cool. I've had people ask me about that. The other thing that's kind of a different paradigm is serverless functions, right? And so Microsoft has a very good function as a service platform, and you can use Spring Cloud Function with that. What does that offering look like? What is the capabilities there?
So if you're processing millions and millions of or billions of events coming in, right? And you want to be event-driven and you want to pay for what you're computing, right? And if you're able to design like small pieces of code that are triggered by events from all over the world, and it can evolve independently, right? The great place to run is Azure Functions, right? We have many, many big customers out there who are running it. I think it was 2 years ago at the SpringOne conference, Best Buy, they showcased how they are using Azure Functions and Spring Boot apps and Java apps right there, right? I think they were showcasing, I remember, when you go and order something on bestbuy.com, when you place an order, immediately several functions start processing parallel, right? And they are designed in a way, it's pay-per-use, so they don't have to reserve capacity. So it can handle loads like Thanksgiving load, school back-to-school load, Christmas load, all those things it can handle. But the key thing is a small piece of code triggered by millions and millions of events around the world that's happening.
Yeah.
Can process them at a high speed. Actually, Best Buy even showed their numbers. They were able to push the processing speed to below the millisecond mark, right? It was in the microseconds range. It was amazing how they showed up.
Wow, that is very cool. And that was before. That's even before you get native images and things like that. That's just regular Spring Boot stuff and Spring Cloud Function. That is cool. And of course, there is now also support. We have Spring Native, so you can build GraalVM native images. And I know your colleague, our friend
Julian,
he did a demo of that, for example. So that was last year he did that demo. That was, as you and I are recording this, it's early June 2021. So when Asir says this summer, he means, you know, in the next 3 months, 4 months, whatever, something like that. Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, the wide range of support. For Josh, you don't have to listen to me, but what I would tell people is start with Azure Spring Cloud. For me, it solves like 80, 90% of my problems. Mm-hmm. But it's Microsoft Azure. So if it's not the paradigm you want for some particular use case, there's plenty of other options, right? You can bring containers, you can bring functions. And it just works. So it's just wonderful. And if you have that legacy application using, you know, some other technology stack, then you can probably bring that to it, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
One thing I've loved is Cosmos DB, which I think is marvelous, right? I'm a huge fan just because it does what it says on the tin, right? Azure Cosmos DB is a multi-model database that's globally available in all these different locations and within a very, very quick SLA, and it gets consistency, right? And you can use it like a graph database or a key value store or a SQL database or a document database or whatever. It's the same data store though. This is one of those things where you can't run that in your own data center, right? Most organizations, even the biggest, don't have the money or the will to set that up,
So Cosmos DB, it is our fast NoSQL database.
Oh yeah. With
open APIs for any scale, right? So it's guaranteed speed at any scale. It simplifies your app deployment. Many of our customers are using it for mission critical core systems. It is fully managed. So this is a place, if you have Java Spring Boot application, you can propel them into future using Azure's Cosmos DB, right? We have Spring Data Cosmos DB connected for you. Or if you're already familiar with Spring Data MongoDB or Spring Data Cassandra, you can use it for that, right? Similarly, if you're using plain old Java app, you can do the same thing as well.
But the thing about Cosmos DB is that you can treat it like, so you mentioned Mongo, you mentioned Cassandra, those work great. I've used those, but you can also talk to it through SQL, right? SQL.
Yeah, it has a SQL interface as well. Yeah.
So yeah, I love Cassandra, but you can't just take your SQL code and run it on Cassandra mm-hmm. without changing it, right? There's some work. It has a kind of a SQL-like language, but it's not the same, you know? With Azure Cosmos DB, I can take these applications that were written for standard SQL, and I can just point them to this new thing, and suddenly I've got a database that's spanning the globe, able to handle the craziest of load, and I didn't do anything. You know, it's like, you don't get free upgrades like that very often in life.
I think one of the things I've seen our customers use Cosmos DB is they place them near their end users, right?
Yeah.
If you have end users in Australia, in Singapore, and in North America, you can place them very close to that. That way you get the highest speed. And from your application point of view, you actually do not know where they are. You just talk to the same endpoint. Right? That's a very simple but very, very impactful concept for developers.
So you're saying my client Java code would connect to the same endpoint, but it automatically gets geolocated?
Yeah, you can set it up. It can be set up in a way that you can have multi-write, multi-read in different regions, right? So that's one that our customers find it very, very attractive about Cosmos DB.
And for people listening, just to be clear, this is a little bit more expensive than like regular Postgres running on one node, but what compared to rewriting the code, mm-hmm. to get all that functionality somehow, or and trying to build or scale out some other thing to do that, it's just so cheap in that context, you know.
Right. When you rewrite, there will be bugs, right? Then you have to debug those bugs in real time.
Wasting human beings' time, you know, it's so expensive. Yeah, that's wonderful. I'm a big fan. There's other pieces like that. Like I've talked about the thing I love about it, Microsoft Azure is that you have all this super, super important infrastructure like Active Directory, which every organization on the planet knows, right? It's not like, if you're a large organization with more than a handful of people, you've probably got Active Directory in there, you know? But I don't want to run it. I don't want to like deploy it and manage it. I'm young. I don't want to, I just don't want to. Life is short, you know? So it's a big system and it's a lot of moving parts, and there are people that get certified to do that and all that stuff. And you should definitely have those skills, but the point is the burden of running it and maintaining it, it's not ours anymore. Microsoft can run it for you, right? And you can just use it on the cloud. Same thing for SQL Server. SQL Server is one of the best databases on the planet, period. Just doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got one of the richest vocabularies for SQL. It is the stuff of legend. When I was a teenager, I was like, I wish I could play with SQL Server, because it was just really, really, mm-hmm. it's like out there. Everybody wanted to use it, you know, and it's just this amazing thing. Again, I don't want to be responsible for backups and maintenance and scale out and all that, but Azure will do it for me, you know.
Azure will take care of everything from that angle, right? All you have to do is your app can just simply either connect using Spring Data JDBC,
yep.
or Spring Data JPA, or Spring Data R2DBC. Right? Everything else is taken care of behind the scenes for you.
Right. Oh yeah, that's true. Actually, that's a great point. R2DBC, it supports. So Microsoft supports reactive almost everywhere, basically, right?
Yes, we do. Reactive everywhere. Yeah. Whether you're using deploying to one of our compute units, or talking to a database, talking to a messaging system.
Yeah.
Supported, yeah.
We had Jonathan Giles on the show some months back, and he was talking about how the SDK team is now using Reactor, the Reactive Data Flow Library, for all the libraries across the mm-hmm. you know, Azure, not just the Spring ones, but all of them, right? And so that's really cool, right? Microsoft is really serious about building the most efficient clients available for everybody.
I think many of our developers and customers tell us that they want to be reactive from the front all the way down to the back.
Right.
And then let the back handle complete the back systems like SQL database or Cosmos DB. Let them handle the load and the back pressure.
Yeah.
And the app can be as efficient as it can be, right?
Yeah.
I still recall about a few years ago, We did some reactor support all the way down to the management libraries too. So you can actually like deploy thousands of virtual machines within a span of 100 seconds across the globe.
That's amazing.
Right? like thousands, you can just quickly across, like for starting from North America all the way to APAC, like, all those machines will be up and running within seconds in all reactive programming.
Oh, that's insane. I mean, it's a magic trick. I've seen you do that demo, right? I don't have the courage to do it myself because I'm scared of the bill, you know, but you work at Microsoft, you can get away with it. Yeah. Like, and I wish, did you record that? Is that video available somewhere, like where people can see it?
Yeah, I have the video. It is a 7-minute segment. It'll show you how I went from 0 to 1 million requests per day to, and how you can turn the slider on to go to 1 billion requests per day in minutes. And you don't have to worry about any infrastructure or monitoring, right? Yeah. Everything, if you don't want the monitoring data, you have to tell us, turn it off.
Yeah, yeah. It's there by default. You get the right reasonable approach by default. Yeah. So that a lot of the stuff we've just talked about is Microsoft Azure, not just Azure Spring Cloud, and I think Azure Spring Cloud is super cool because it gives Spring developers a way to take their Spring Boot applications and get them to production. But what's really valuable to me is not just that trick, because getting my jar up and running, talking to the config server into a service registry into whatever, that's fine, right? But what I really want is easy bindings to my data, and I want to know that I have easy integration for tracing, for logs, for for metrics, and Azure has that, right? There's this really great integration there for Micrometer, which is the distributed the metrics rather facade. Just really cool, really really good. Can you tell us
about that Micrometer? Oh, I remember if you just take the distributed version of the pet clinic, right?
Yeah,
that was built by your team. What they have done is they have added custom metrics. And the custom metrics where they're keeping track of all the pet owners, the pets, and their visits, right? And what we did is we actually didn't write any piece of code. We started looking for those metrics coming into Application Insight. Suddenly what we saw is the entire range of like what happened every minute, how many pet owners are there, how many visits are happening. It's just coming through without writing any piece of code. So what is happening is your framework, Spring framework, it is pumping into the Micrometer and it gets centralized and OpenTelemetry is picking them all up.
Yeah.
And it's showing up in a colorful way. And one thing I showed to some of my developers is, I was running it. It was like almost like a flat line coming in, right? And around 9 p.m., I turned on auto scale. And you should see those numbers like jumping up and down like this because it's automatically scaling up and down. And you can see it on the monitor without writing any piece of code.
Oh, that is so cool. Data center in a box. You just turn the crank and you've got a data center. I just love that. Oh, that is so cool. I'm a big fan. So what's the big thing you want to talk to? We've covered up all this stuff. Is there anything new people should know about that we haven't told them already? Because, we just did these workshops. Was it a workshop or something for, different regions just a few weeks ago or a few months ago? I don't know. Maybe a month ago. We did those, and those are, people like those. And I know Julian and you do a lot of demos, and then there's these demos that we do for different regions. Like we did one for EMEA. Mm-hmm. When was that? That was this year, I think.
A few weeks ago. Yeah, it was. Yeah, a few weeks ago.
Was it this year? Was that all? No, with you, me, and Rory and somebody else. Was it this one? No, there's another one I did. Maybe I think you were there. Was it the one we did with EMEA?
Yeah, that was last year. Yeah, I remember that.
Oh, okay. That was last year. Okay, it's time sure flies. But anyway, we do all these little events, and so sometimes I forget that even though it's not new to you and me, mm-hmm. and to the people that come to these events, maybe there's some new things that people should know that we should tell them right now, even though it's not new to us.
So there are many innovations happening in Microsoft, and many, many innovations are happening in collaboration with partners, including VMware.
Yeah.
So if you just take Azure Spring Cloud, what do you see today? We have made it easy. But the best is yet to come because we continuously work with VMware. We are going to be announcing many, many features this year and next year, right?
Yeah.
As well as the year after, right? we want to make it easy. We want to abstract a lot of complexity away, right?
Yeah.
That way you can just focus on your business, right? And you're going to see these announcements coming through.
Yep.
But Julia and Josh, you're also going to be with us when we make all these,
all these
announcements coming this year. And we'll be showing lots of demos as well, right?
Spring on. Are we going to be there?
Yes, spring on. Absolutely. Absolutely. We'll be going to be there on the main stage showing off
many
of the features that Microsoft and VMware built together, right?
Right.
So that's from a compute angle. Similarly, like whether you take functions or app servers or Kubernetes, there's going to be a lot of innovations coming from that angle as well.
Right? Yeah.
From observability, we are investing a lot to make sure not just what you have seen today as amazing things to keep an eye on production and troubleshoot all of those things. We want to give you deeper insights than what you see today. So our application insights team, Azure Monitor team, they're all investing to show you deeper so that you can, when you troubleshoot, you have like wall clock every step of the way so that you can see them and understand what's going on with your code itself.
Yeah. Cool.
So there are many, many innovations like this that are coming through. So you just have to wait and watch.
Oh, darn it. I was hoping you'd spill the beans, but okay. My friend, where can people go to learn more about, well, Azure Spring Cloud and Microsoft Azure and just our stuff that we do jointly?
So we have a Java on Azure Developer Hub. That is a pretty good starting point for documentation. We also have Java on Azure Learning Path on Microsoft Learn. Right. We have about 16 modules, and many of us are still building many more modules. These are like small bite size. You just take 30 minutes during your lunchtime, and you can just go through it. And there's a little bit of exercise, and you can actually, today we pushed out one. I don't know whether you saw that, Josh. Actually, we put out a notice saying they got 30 minutes. You can propel your Java applications into the future using Azure Cosmos DB, where one of PM, program manager from Cosmos DB, explains how to do it in less than 30 minutes. So if you're having lunch and you have a short time break, you can just jump on. So those are places where they can get started today.
Absolutely awesome. My friend, where would people go to learn more about you? You're online, right?
I'm on Twitter as well as LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn compared to Twitter.
Right.
Certainly, you know where I am, right, Josh?
Right, oh yeah. So on Twitter, it's the AsirSelvasinGh.
Correct.
Okay, so, and then LinkedIn, I mean, I've used it before. I don't really know how to find you there.
Oh, LinkedIn. If you just put my first name and my last name, it should be there.
Okay, there we go. Perfect. So good stuff. Good stuff. I will, I appreciate you taking the time to come hang out and talk to me. I've missed you. It's been, you know, weeks since we've talked, maybe a week. I'm just so impressed with all this stuff. I'm hoping that when people will hear this and then they'll come to Spring One to see the big reveals because there's just so much stuff, you know? Okay. My friend, thank you so much for your time.
Okay. Thank you, Josh, for inviting me.
A Beautiful Podcast is produced by me, Josh Long. I do these podcasts because I believe that everything we do in software is for and made better by people. I want to hear from you. I'm Josh at joshlong.com by email or at starbuxman on Twitter, where, of course, my direct messages are wide open. Do you have guest ideas, topic suggestions, feedback? Don't hesitate to reach out. If you like the show, then please consider rating it on iTunes and leaving a review, as it really helps the show. I sampled music from Steve Combs' Them from Morning in Springtime and Steve Combs' Small Victory, both of which are licensed under a Creative Commons license. I'm trying to hire production assistants to make the production of this podcast easier. I want to make sure that we can add things like show notes and transcripts and just generally do more. If you would like to advertise on the show, then please reach out to me. And if you can't or don't want to advertise but would like to otherwise support the show, then please consider supporting me at patreon.com, patreon.com/Josh Long for as low as $4 a month. Thanks again. No harm came to any seasons in the making of this podcast.